Welcome into the 5 o'clock hour of this Wednesday edition of News on the Hill. I am Brighton McConnell. Thanks so much for tuning in over 97.9 The Hill and streaming us through chapelboro.com. The third hour of the show today and the third hour of an emergency UNC Faculty Council meeting continuing right now as they discuss the leadership at UNC, and they are currently drafting a resolution. This meeting was called because Chair of the Faculty, Mimi Chapman, recently heard discussion at the university's Board of Trustees or the UNC System's Board of Governors may be moving to remove UNC Chancellor Kevin Guskowitz in the coming days. To start the meeting today, Chapman explained her comments, saying that somebody contacted her and said that they were in a meeting where potential interim chancellor names were being thrown around. Chapman said after talking with the current UNC chancellor and Provost Bob Bluin that she decided to call this based on what they were hearing as well. Now, Chapman said that she believes the reasoning is for Guskowitz's support of hiring Nicole Hannah-Jones at the university's journalism school, something that reports in May revealed to be problematic for some Board of Trustees members who opposed Hannah-Jones's representation on the faculty because of the Pulitzer Prize winner's work on the 1619 project. Now, while Hannah-Jones eventually turned down this role, moving to Howard University, Guskowitz did say before and after that he wished that she had joined the faculty. And at the moment, the faculty council drafting a resolution affirming their confidence in Chancellor Kevin Guskowitz. Chapman said during the meeting and to the NNO last night that a change in leadership at this time, quote, would be an absolute disaster for the campus community. So we're continuing to follow that meeting there, and when they have this resolution out, we will be sure to convey that here on the air and on chapelboro.com and, of course, our social media pages as well. Now, one of the groups that is potentially considering moving away from Chancellor Kevin Guskowitz reportedly met earlier today. The UNC Board of Trustees held their committee meetings ahead of a full board meeting tomorrow morning, and they have a brand new board, six new members meeting for the first time today. And with that, the board has assigned some new roles. Dave Bolick will now serve as the board's chair, while John Pryor was elected as vice chair, both of those men among the four trustees to vote against granting Nicole Hannah-Jones tenure during an emergency meeting at the end of June. Once again, continuing to keep an eye on the faculty council meeting, and we will have updates from that Board of Trustees full meeting tomorrow morning. Turning to some crime news, a Chapel Hill man faces felony charges for stabbing an employee at a local venue last night. Chapel Hill police arrested Troy Thompson on assault to inflict injury late last night after an incident in Local 506 on West Franklin Street. Ownership for the music venue and bar said Thompson stabbed an employee in the leg as he was being removed for hassling other employees and bartenders. Local 506 said while the employee did go to the hospital Tuesday night, they did not suffer serious injuries from the incident. Thompson appeared in court on the charges today and was being held at the Orange County Jail under a secured bond. Turning to some education news, Chapel Hill Carborough's Food for Students program has served more than 1.3 million meals to local children since the pandemic began. After schools initially closed on March 13, 2020, the extended program, formerly known as Food for the Summer, utilized USDA funds, private donations, and community volunteer support to provide local students with meals every single day since then. Now, as the food assistance program is preparing for the upcoming academic year and more in-person instruction, they are looking to change their distribution model. 97.9 The Hill's Elle Karras has more.
After celebrating 1 million meals delivered in February and its one-year anniversary in March of this year, Food for Students is marching into the summer months with a flurry of food distribution events. At a distribution event in June, Food for Students distributed more than 15,000 meals in one day. Liz Cartano, the director of dining for Chapel Hill Carborough City Schools, said the need for food assistance has not let up, even after more than a year into the pandemic.
So we tallied up, and between our delivery sites, school going to Every Food, the Boys and Girls Club, Hargraves, Town of Chapel Hill, we are currently supporting over 50 programs with food.
At its inception in March of 2020, Food for Students only had 20 food distribution sites serving meals 5 days a week. Soon after, to accommodate for the growing need amid lockdown, the program expanded to serving meals 7 days a week at 37 sites. This February, before some CHCCS students returned to the classroom under a hybrid learning model, Cartano said food for students grew to 48 distribution sites, utilizing the unused school buses to better reach every facet of the community. Now, with some kids in summer school programs and others spending their summer vacation at home, the program is operating out of four district schools, providing seven-day meal boxes for pickup every Wednesday in addition to the larger distribution events.
So families can go to one of those four sites and pick up meals, as well as we are still delivering to not with buses, but with a volunteer network.
That volunteer network delivers to an additional seven sites to reach those families who are not able to come in person to pick up their meals. Cartano said this week they are serving 550 students. After all the summer school programs end August 6, Food for Students is going to have one last large distribution event in early August.
Anywhere between 13 and 14,000 meals will go out on August 11th, and then August 23rd, school starts.
Following the event on August 11th, Cartano said Food for Students will once again adapt its model as students return to the classroom for the fall semester, and free breakfast and lunches are made available through the federal government. The U.S. Department of Agriculture recently extended the Child Nutrition Program waiver to allow the nation's public schools to serve free meals to all children through June 2022. Historically, free school meals are only offered to low-income students. However, after COVID-19 caused many schools to close for in-person instruction in 2020, the federal government opened the school meal program to everyone. Even when schools reopened for in-person classes this school year, the waiver for free meals remained in place.
So that is going to be a major shift in how food programs operate, and from a multitude of lenses, in my opinion. School lunch is going to become the norm. School lunch could become cool if you do your menus right. School lunch could really start being a shift that helps with any equity issues that you have, because you're now not going to have a cafe loaded with kids that are only free and reduced getting meals, where every kid can participate in your program for free.
Food for Students will now be switching to North Carolina's Seamless Summer option, which allows the program to feed every student for free as long as they're in school. For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Elle Karras.
Time now for a look at some sports news from across our region. Academic awards continuing to come in as the college athletic season is finished. For UNC women's tennis, the entire team earned some recognition this week. The program earned ITA all-academic team status, meaning they have earned a grade point average of 3.2 or higher this past academic year, as well as 11 Tar Heels also earning individual honors, the ITA Scholar Athlete Award for this past season for their GPA. Those include Fiona Crawley, Alexa Graham, Anna Harmon, Casey Harvey, Sarah McClure, Cameron Mora, Sophia Patel, Allie Sanford, Elizabeth Scani, Riley Tran, and Anika Yalagata. Meanwhile, a total of 463 Carolina athletes earned spots on the ACC Academic Honor Roll for this past year. I will not be reading all of those names out, don't worry. It is the second highest total in school history for the ACC Academic Honor Roll, behind just last year's submission, and it is the third year in a row that UNC's total has topped 400 student athletes. Now, the ACC Academic Honor Roll is comprised of student athletes who participated in a varsity-level sport and registered a grade point average of 3.0 or better for the full academic year. Finally, the NBA Finals are back tonight. Cameron Johnson's Phoenix Suns are looking to improve on their 2-1 series lead over the Milwaukee Bucks. Coming off the bench for the series, Johnson has played pretty well in the minutes he's seen. He's averaging more than 10 points per game and has sunk 38% of his three-point attempts, as well as throwing down that massive dunk in Game 3, which, again, if you haven't seen, you should definitely, definitely check out. Johnson and the rest of the Suns will look to win on the road in Milwaukee tonight as Game 4 in the NBA Finals tips off at 9 p.m. mentioned this just a few minutes ago, but the UNC Faculty Council meeting, an emergency called meeting that was being held this afternoon, has now officially adjourned after close to 2 hours and some change. And they did, at the end, pass a resolution affirming their confidence for Chancellor Kevin Guskowitz, saying his leadership is necessary and that in order for the campus community to continue on its pattern. As part of that resolution, the Faculty Council also called for shared governance and transparent governance, talking about some discussions being held at the Board of Trustees and the Board of Governors level to potentially remove Chancellor Guskowitz in the coming days. We will continue to follow that story as it develops, but it's worth mentioning the UNC Board of Trustees has a full board meeting tomorrow. Now, turning to local elections, lots heating up there as the filing period is coming to a close Friday at noon, and we're beginning to see some more people throw their names into the ring for some local races. One race that we learned will indeed be contested is the race for Chapel Hill mayor, as town council member Hongbin Gu filed to run yesterday. She will now be challenging incumbent mayor Pam Heminger, who is running for a fourth term, and that means that that race will be contested. It also means that the Chapel Hill Town Council race now has three open seats, three new council members expected to join in December, since council member Alan Boyensee will not be running for re-election. Gu will be running for mayor, and Rachel Chavis stepped down back in February 2020, and that seat remains to be vacant. We have an article updating the local election filing period and those who have put their names into races on chapelborough.com, so be sure to check that out. We'll be getting it updated with today's submissions very shortly, and we will continue to keep you updated until that filing period closes at noon on Friday. Now, looking ahead to the 2022 midterm elections in North Carolina, some policy experts are already doing what they can to examine and forecast those races. Recent data out of public policy polling shows what could happen on the campaign trail for each parties this year, especially within the high-profile U.S. Senate race. 97.9 The Hill's Ava Pukach has more.
With the retirement of North Carolina Republican Senator Richard Burr, the 2022 Senate election may be a closely contended race. As candidates launch primary campaigns to replace Burr, several polling companies are surveying the political climate, especially following the 2020 election. Tom Jensen, the director of public policy polling based in Raleigh, recently spoke to 97.9 The Hill. He said recent poll results show differing perspectives on contenders between the Democratic and Republican parties. In the Democratic Party, Jensen said voters are more likely to elect Black candidates in primary races for important offices, especially since the murder of George Floyd.
And we were without fail finding that the undecided voters in these key primaries were strongly moving towards supporting Black candidates for those offices.
He said in recent elections held for mayors in places like Pittsburgh and Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, voters chose to vote out incumbent mayors in primary elections in favor of Black candidates instead. For North Carolina's midterms, this means it could bode well for Democratic Senate candidate and former state Supreme Court Justice Sherry Beasley.
So I think that probably also has significant implications for our Senate primary here in North Carolina.
On the opposite side of the aisle, Jensen said the endorsement of North Carolina Senate Republican primary candidate Ted Budd by former President Donald Trump will likely make it very difficult for other candidates to beat Budd.
It's very obvious that Trumpism is not something that the Republican Party is moving on from at all. It's still sort of the central defining feature of the party.
This impacts Republican Senate primary candidate Pat McCrory, whom public policy polling previously found to be the strongest Republican candidate for the general election. Jensen said before the Trump endorsement of candidate Budd, McCrory led Democratic candidates Sherry Beasley and Jeff Jackson in polls, while other Republicans trailed.
But now Republicans are being pushed in the direction of nominating one of these more clearly conservative candidates in the form of Ted Budd, and I think that gives Democrats more of an opening to perhaps win this seat than maybe they would have if the party did go with McCrory. But I think it's going to be very hard for McCrory to overcome Trump going against him.
For more election coverage, visit chapelborough.com. For 97.9 The Hill, I'm Ava Pukach.
Sticking with some local government news, the Orange County Department on Aging is working on its latest 5-year master aging plan. If you are someone who's looking to grow old in the area, whether it is short term or within the next couple of decades, they want to hear your thought in a survey out right now, but that survey is set to close soon. Director of the Department on Aging, Janice Tyler, recently spoke with us here at 97.9 The Hill. She said the goal with this survey is to reach 1,000 responses in the coming days. She shared details about the survey and the Department on Aging's master aging plans in general.
We've been working, doing plans for our community for the last 20 years. So this is our fifth plan. And this is where we like to hear from the community to see what people are thinking about aging services. What's missing? What are we doing good? So we're asking you in the survey about all kinds of things. We want to know about health concerns. We want to know housing concerns. We want to hear about transportation. With our last plan, we heard loud and clear that we had some employment concerns in our community among our older adults. So we spent the last 4 years doing a lot of work in that area. Also, interest in outdoor spaces. What do older adults want in outdoor spaces? And then, of course, we've got social and civic participation. How do you want to get engaged in your community? So the survey is going to take you about 20 minutes to fill out, and we want to hear from you.
Once again, that was Janice Tyler with the Orange County Department on Aging. If you are looking to fill out that survey for their master aging plan, head to orangecountync.gov/MAP survey, and it is set to close again in the coming days. The initial deadline was tomorrow. They might be extending that by a little, but it will not be open much longer beyond that. 5:35 here on 97.9 The Hill, time to step aside, but we do have Nathaniel Ratliff and a song from him on the way, as well as more looks at your local and virtual events calendar and traffic and weather together. Stick around.